go to thecognitiverampage.com. Feel free to contribute, donate, keep fueling the change, whatever it is that you guys can do to help continue to allow this to happen. None of this would happen without you and your love and your support and, of course, your contributions. Love you.
The Cognitive Rampage, a scientific approach to self-discovery, change, and life optimization, is now available on Amazon. What I do in the book is I fuse the latest research from the cognitive, behavioral, social, environmental, and biological sciences. It's not just motivational fluff and wordplay. Now, I do talk about my own story, so there's some kind of inspiration in there, but I'm not just spinning words and hyping you up with motivational fluff. Whether you need a life change, simply enjoy self-exploration and optimization, want to discover new hidden passions, or reduce the life-altering effects of toil, anxiety, depression, all of those issues, this book is for you. This book is not a cookie-cutter method of steps to follow. You'll customize the scientific framework with your own personal beliefs to build your authentic change. That way you assimilate it faster and quicker. It's not just copying my beliefs and telling you step one, step two. These will come from your beliefs as how you extend and build the foundation upon this framework. You'll use this framework throughout your whole life, through every change, and through every age. These are not empty words of motivational spin. This book is an experience. The Cognitive Rampage is based in science and is built from your beliefs. It's a path to help you unleash your desired change. You can apply this method on your own with no harmful side effects. Welcome to Cognitive Rampage Podcast. Hope you're taking care of you. Hope you're living your Cognitive Rampage. We got a triple header today. So we've already finished one podcast. I enjoyed that very much with Sohan. We went down a lot of avenues there on that first podcast. My gosh, spiritually and all kinds of ways. I'm just listening to that podcast. It was deep. We covered a lot in a short period of time, it felt like. But this is number two of the triple header podcast today. And once again, another member of the Tribe of Change. I've mentioned it on the first podcast. Basol asked to join the Tribe of Change. It's on Facebook. It's a closed private group, so you ask. There's tons of moderators that do their due diligence before just bringing anybody in. We don't do it because we believe we're top secret or anything. We just, it's a mind frame that, you know, kind of what we look for in the tribe, so we can discuss just about anything and openly and share, be humble enough to share. But anyway, a very active member in that, an active member in a lot of things, from functional patterns all the way up, who was nominated again by multiple Tribe of Change members to come on the podcast. And that's what we're doing as a triple header of the Tribe of Change members today. And it's good to see you. And, well, welcome to the show, Sean Weldman.
Hey, buddy. How's it going?
It's going all right. Viewers or listeners may have heard me chuckle a little bit as I introduced you, man, because, well, I know what you're doing or about to do. You're sitting there. Well, I'll let you tell them, man, where you're sitting, what you're about to do, man, as an introduction, if you will.
All right. So, ladies and gentlemen, I live in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. It's minus 13 degrees Celsius right now. So just to show you guys a little bit of a view, as you can see, there's a bunch of snow on the ground. Originally going to be doing the podcast on my computer, but the microphone for some reason wasn't working. So, you know, I guess that's an added benefit for me because now I can do a cold therapy session while on the Cognitive Rampage. What better way, right?
Oh man, I love it. That's non-planned, non-intense, man. It's not a setup at all, so it just worked. So I whatever you need to do to get comfortable, man, I appreciate you sharing that moment, right? People see the videos of it, and maybe you're doing this, maybe walk through what your experience is like, if you could. So as you're giving yourself this therapy, as your entry into it, right, kind of walk through the viewer of what you're experiencing, what the thoughts are, what you're applying. Maybe even what's happening, why you're applying it, if that's okay, if you could do that for us.
Absolutely. Yeah, so first I'll kind of just talk about my initial starting phase into this practice. So I originally discovered this, like many other people have, through the Wim Hof method. And this happened around mid-spring in 2016. So 2 years back. And I understood about the benefits of cold therapy, taking cold showers and things of that nature. But I c couldn't really summon the will within in order to accomplish that. So it wasn't until, like I said, mid 2016 where I started to experiment, more frequently with the cold showers, started ending with cold showers, and started to gradually go from showers to lukewarm to freezing cold. And then I just went to, straight cold from there. And then come spring, come fall side, and I decided I definitely wanted to take things up a notch and go to large bodies of water, such as lakes and rivers and things of that nature within the area, and just really challenge my body and see what would happen, if I would live to tell the story. And turns out I'm here, and it was a really great experience because for me, I had always suffered from mild forms of depression and anxiety. It's something that kind of debilitated me for quite a long time. And what I ended up discovering therapy practice is that it really eradicated a lot of the symptoms associated with depression and anxiety. I felt a total uplift in energy, just clarity of the mind, and really boosting up my mitochondria, the engine within your cells that produce ATP, the energy currency of the body. And then it came winter time. There was some ice that was starting to freeze over on the lake, so there was still a little bit of pockets where I'd be able to access the water. And I remember I was with one of my friends at the time, and I was just like, man, fuck. Am I going to do this right now? I mean, I've done quite a bit of stuff right up until this point. I've done the cold showers. I've jumped into freezing cold water in the lakes. But this is a whole other ball game, right? And I'll admit to you, Adam, I was to jump in because I didn't really know what my body could handle at that point. And you know what? I was really in the crossroads of my mind where one point of my mind was saying, don't do this, Sean. Don't do this. This is dangerous. The government told you this. Society told you that. Your parents told you you're going to get a cold. And then another point of me was saying, you know what, man, just try it out. Step out of your comfort zone and, see what can come out of the magnificence of, stepping into that. And, I decided to jump in. And when I did, I actually realized it was as bad as I thought.
Maybe losing you in and out, man.
Yeah, and it's really age to really conquer their own fears. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, well, at the end of
Good.
it, I heard about conquering your own fears, really. And it's true on a smaller scale that's right in front of you, getting into ice water or facing something like that truly is for a lot of people. And facing something small like that really, well, it teaches the body. It teaches the body a response. It gets used to a response. I heard you mention that, debilitated by anxiety and depression. And that's a serious way to describe what you were going through.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that we all tend to have suffered from one way or another, I think, in this diseased world that we live in. And it's if we're really honest with ourselves, we can kind of see the issues left, right, and center where we go. And once you can really get yourself out of that entrapment into the light of yourself, into the thoughts, feelings, and actions, and living with authenticity, it really serves a purpose for you to inspire others.
Yeah,
Who are also suffering.
well, we come in and
Hear
out,
me
man.
now?
It's probably because it's the phone and outside. We may be losing signal in and out of probably your
Yeah.
Wi-Fi there.
Hold on. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we do. Yeah, gotcha.
Okay. Yeah, so there's three of there's the understanding of, and then there's the application of that knowledge to apply it, and then basically use wisdom. You have to say, sorry, so basically half the battle is knowing the knowledge, and the other half is teaching it to other people, because what good is the knowledge if you're not sharing with other people and bring them on their own path to empowering themselves with becoming really their own doctors and assisting their body.
Yeah, definitely losing you, brother.
Hold on one second.
Yeah, we caught the beginning of, which is good. I understand the balance and keeping up with what you're talking, but I don't want to interrupt you either when you're certainly in a flow state of talking. So I'm hoping it comes through a little bit better on the other end. But
can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe I'll just stay inside, man, because the Wi-Fi is a little shitty. Not gonna lie.
Yeah, it was a good idea, right? I'd love to quote the movie. Yeah. I love to quote the movie Ghost in the Darkness. If you haven't seen it, it's a throwback movie. You should watch it. It's Val Kilmer building a bridge, and there's some lions in this area. Those lions are actually in a museum in I think it's D.C. But he's trying to trap one of the lions. Tries a trick, builds this little thing. It's a great idea anyway. Remington, an old hunter, shows up who's been brought in to catch these lions, and he says, well, did your trap idea work? And he said, no, it was still a good idea.
Yeah, exactly, man. Yeah, it was fun while it lasted, right? I got a good session out of that, so.
Yeah, you're outside of -3 right now. For most people, 2 or 3 seconds out there.
No, -13. -13, bro.
Yeah, -13.
Yeah, it's really cold. Celsius. So
yes, that would be enough for most people just standing at the front door, right? With probably absolutely. A pair of shorts on.
Yeah, absolutely, man. It's anyone who's really looking to start out with this, I definitely would recommend, start out with cold showers. So the end of your shower, take a hot one, and then at the very end, just end it 30 seconds cold, right? For 1 week. And then for the next week, I would do starting 30 seconds cold for the shower, do a hot shower, and then end cold. Do that for the second week, and then go to 1 minute starting cold, and then hot, and then 1 minute ending cold. And then after about a month, start incorporating ice baths, anywhere from 2 to 3 times a week for just about 5 minutes, work your way up to 20. And then if you're really feeling up for it and you want to activate the champ within, then you could, go into lakes and rivers and take another step in the right direction to health.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my
Walk us through, you were breaking up a little bit, and because I thought we were touching on some points that I realized, or I could see meant something to you, how you were using it to pull yourself out of a behavior pattern, a thought pattern, being debilitated, as you said, through with anxiety and depression. I kind of want to walk back through that, because if it broke up, there were some strong points there I wanted to clarify, man, and maybe we can get more of a direct, idea of what you were really experiencing, and how that helped you, and how the...
Yes. Yeah, I just, I think like when you're doing something like jumping into cold water, like it can be very challenging because the cold is such a primal fear for most people. I mean, people are totally scared shitless of the cold. We're constantly in a warm environment, warm clothes, warm food, warm showers, thinking we're living in the tropics when you're in the Northern Hemisphere in Canada in the midst of the winter, right? So I think that... because of that primal fear, it ends up really debilitating people. And when you're able to go through that, it's building mental fortitude because you're doing something that you necessarily don't want to really be doing. And that can translate to all walks of life. And what I found for me in terms of a mental sense is that it really encouraged me to step forward in my life and go after some of my goals and aspirations that I had, and really just start to unwind all these negative thought patterns that I had. And what's interesting about cold therapy is that just 30 seconds in 0 degrees Celsius water can by 300%, I believe. And dopamine is a part of the brain as a neurotransmitter that's lodged in the brain that's responsible for how we feel, you know, our mood, our motivation. It's known as the motivation molecule. And cold therapy also boosts up our endorphins by close to 500%, right? And those endorphins subsequently are going to help boost the immune system as well, because 80% of our immune cells have endorphin receptors attached to it. So if you increase your endorphins, you're going to boost your immune system. And endorphins are also a part of the opiate pathways, right? So it's essentially an opiate. So instead of, you know, performing destructive patterns like alcohol, doing like a bunch of alcohol, a bunch of drugs, things that are really destructive and not really beneficial for us in the short term and the long term, we, you know, switch that up with things like sun exposure, grounding, cold thermogenesis, you know, getting all your tasks done on a daily basis, things of that nature, to fill out those opiate receptors by building up those endorphins. And that way you're going to actually do something that's going to be benefiting you in the long run rather than causing a detriment to you. So
I think a lot of people too, right? I've tried to explain it many times through Jack Cruz and various things, even biomechanics with Naudi stuff. I'm a proponent of all of these things. And as you walk though through the human psyche of so many people, first the belief that it's medical is something they struggle with, and trying to say, okay, well, I can take the pill for this, or there's something easier for that. I take supplements for simply this, rather than the basic things you're talking about of sun exposure, cryotherapy, et cetera. And a lot of times the human psyche builds up this hardcore defense that you don't understand how complicated my life is. That being said, you think me jumping in an ice bath or getting in the sun for a few times a day is going to have any change on how miserable my life is. This becomes one of the hardest beliefs to try to get through with anybody.
Yeah. I mean, people are looking for constant instant gratification, right? They want things pretty much brought to them on a silver platter instantaneously without putting in the work required and without taking the responsibility for your life, you know, for the way that you are feeling.
And really, right? what you're talking about, Sean, is sitting in a location. You're not even doing anything. You're sitting in
Man.
So, and the truth is, so a lot of times people go, that is way too simplistic for what I am suffering from. And they avoid it, not only because of the fear, because a lot of people, well, ice baths for, you know, even 10 seconds, it's terrifying, or even a cold shower. But until you do it, you don't know until you feel its effects. But if you can get by that, that's all you're still doing is sitting in two different locations multiple times throughout the day as opposed to others.
Yeah, exactly. And even just like, you know, wearing blue blocking glasses in the evening time. I mean, you wear these goofy looking glasses in the evening time and they're going to dramatically improve your health by regulating your circadian rhythms. It's so simple. You don't have to change your diet. You don't have to even exercise. You barely even have to move. You just literally put on these glasses and that's it. Yep. It's that simple, right? And I think people overcomplicate things. And I think it has a lot to do with some subconscious imprints that are going on. I think a lot of people identify with their traumas and with their dysfunctions, and it becomes really ingrained with who they are. And for them to really step beyond that into the light of transforming themselves, into a, you know, a better way of living and a better way of being, it's unknown. It's uncharted territory. They don't know what to expect. They don't know the responsibility that it might bring to maintain that. And I think it really scares a lot of people. And I think that puts them in a place of complacency with what they're doing with their practice, right?
For sure, man. And look, despite what story one may tell about their lives, even if it's a drama story, even if it's one thing after another, the way that we tell our story, it's hard to change that. It's hard to say, hey, you know, Adam, you don't know what the fuck my life's been, right? You want me to just act like it's this and change it, right? It can be that easy. So, but when you are asking people to question a narrative, a story that they tell, even if it's bad, at least it gives them something to hold on to. Because a lot of times, if I am not this person that suffers from, if I'm not this person that is being affected by, well, then the definition of who I am becomes pretty loose. And how I tell my story, where I fit in with my family, my community, all of this becomes lost. And, you know, we quickly look for safety places, and labels give us safety. So we fit into a known construct, what we want to create. And it's difficult many times for people to simply even want to let go of the idea that, hey, I am a trauma victim. I am an addict, even, which are terrible words to use. You know, when we frame ourselves to be this, even if it's shitty, even if you go, don't you realize you're the drama one in the family? They may go, well, no, I'm not. But inside they're like, yeah, and that's who I am. I'm defined by that. I'm this person. I'm that label. This is how society is being me to be. And that too, even though destructive, can be comfortable.
Yeah. I mean, I hear the saying a lot, well, you know, that's who I am, right? That's just who I am, accept who I am. Well, it's like, no, that's how you've chosen to become. This is the character that you've decided to play in this movie we call life. And you can change the character. You can change the script. It's just about summoning the will within, aligning your thoughts, feelings, and actions as one. As you think, so you feel, so you act. And not accepting who you are in terms of mediocrity and in terms of, you know, where you're at, it's really just about rising above that and living to the highest ideals that you can, always looking towards self-improvement, right? Because, you know, if I meet you 6 months from now, Adam, and you're really just kind of the same person, then I got to ask you, well, what have you really done to grow as an individual? Like, and that's kind of the thing that I see with a lot of people, especially some of my friends that I've had since childhood. You know, they're really, some of them are really kind of just the same as they were since high school. I mean, yeah, they might have a nice job now and a fancy car and living on their own kind of thing, but it's like their character has really stayed the same. And, you know, it's not to even point any jabs at anyone per se. It's just really just honestly observing, you know, how they're acting and how they haven't really changed their persona. You know, I'm always looking for myself to improve who I am. I recognize a lot of my faults. You know, I'm not going to try to create this whole perfectionist mantra in my head, nor do I want to, you know, send that message to other people. But, you know, it's really just about always striving to improve, you know, your skills that you have and picking up new skills so that you can really help yourself and subsequently help other people. Cause that's what it's really all about, man. It's helping other people, spreading the love, sharing information and really doing your best. You know, you're doing your part on this planet, essentially.
Yeah.
Making the world a better place before you came.
Yeah, before the future. And a lot of people, you know, we get lost and the labels help us do that. And, you know, I write sometimes that when did we lose the curiosity of our childhood? When was it that we became where we said, yep, I got this shit figured out. This is all I need. This is what I do. This is who I am. And, you know, what happens? And I relate a lot of times to, you know, someone may experience their subjective trauma in life of something that happens. And a lot of times it's when a label exchanges, when you become no longer single, but married, when you are no longer married, but a family, when you are the father, right? Then we interchange these labels that apply of what we must do, what we must become, at least what we take care of is the proximity, is this location. But, you know, I often ponder, you know, if we just focus on our small location and blind ourselves that, hey, we're doing at least what we can right here with my family, is that really enough? Or are we rationalizing away what we are doing as being enough? And well, that's all we can do, right? And rather than go outside. But, you know, I would chat with you, Sean, about, you know, a place I arrived to after, shit, man, I don't know how many years of biohacking optimization, writing multiple books on the idea of it. And where I have found myself oftentimes, even talking with those that do it themselves, where you become redlined, where you're overdone or overflowing with information, too much has come in, and then you begin to feel like, well, I can't keep up. And almost the more you learn, the more you don't know, and I'll never catch up to it. And then the next thing, and oh my God, this needs to fix. I got to change the light bulbs. I got to do the light, right? When it becomes overwhelming in an optimization world that, you know, I've often said, you know, one day it would be funny if I just took every biohack I ever heard and applied them all at the same time. If I would have any time to even take a shit in my life, if I was doing
everything,
right? But the basic one, you know, so that red line, have you got to a point sometimes to where it's almost where you go, I get it. If I continue to travel down these roads of experience and optimization, well, will I die on there? And I hear one day, because I'm really into what people are thinking before they're dying. I've read a lot of research on stuff. And they're like, I wish I had just taken some time for myself and just hugged someone a little more, spent time with someone I loved a little bit, and work less. These are kind of the things you hear at the end of life in a real majority. And I think that's something to learn from. So I think about, man, that line between optimization and performing life to a point, or, you know, where's the stress level come in when that starts to factor our cortisol levels of optimizing to the fullest and full throttling versus, you know, the person that just goes, you know, I read an article the other day, people are like 103, 105, never lifted a weight in their life, never ran, never competed in anything, didn't play sports, they walked. They walked for the most part. Was a common thread between like 10 of these people that have lived so long. Nothing intense, no surgeries, nothing like that. They walked for the most part and had active roles during the day. And that was pretty much it. Mind you, it's a small sample, but, you know, so what's that line between the full throttle optimization when we're triggering something, or that line of going, I'm just a duck on the water today, man?
Yeah, I think really it boils down to what your stress response is in relation to the optimization, and also just stepping into a state of relaxation and kind of, you know, accepting that there might be times where, you know, you're going to be in an environment where you can't block the blue light, or, hey, if you go out with your friends one night and you feel like not looking like a goof wearing some blue blocking glasses, and hey, go out, have a good time, man, and you'll be fine. And I think it's really the stress response that you associate with your activities that are going to be your biggest downfall, rather than, you know, you losing out on not wearing the glasses and then affecting, you know, your eyes, which affects the brain and then the body and so on and so forth. And, you know, I definitely struggled out in the beginning of my journey, because there was so much widespread information that I was so interested in learning about. You know, it was like I was totally like reborn. I was just like, whoa, wait a second, like, what, like, the government's not here to protect us? They're actually here to enslave us? What? But that's not what my parents told me. That's not what society told me. And then you start like looking into like all these like conspiracy theories and you know, pretty much breaking down the false structures of the medical industry, and you start looking into and finding out, you know, the deception behind that, and how it's really just a cash cow it's basically just like a medical mafia to milk every ounce of dollar out of the cash cow, which is the human body, essentially. You're really just uncovering, going through all this to really empower yourself with knowledge to not depend so much on the system. And it can become so overwhelming, because where do you find that balance where it's like, okay, I get to play and have fun, but then I got to go and get back to work and learn more so that I can be a better servitude to myself and others. So yeah, it's definitely a fine line to walk through. But you know, for me over the years, I've definitely found more of a balance where I'm not getting as stressed out about all the information that's coming at you left, right, and center. And I kind of started to realize that, you know what, the information is never going to stop. It's going to keep coming at you. And you just got to do the best you can to stay with the new wave of information. And even a lot of information that, you know, was in years past that you weren't aware of, you know, just, you know, mend to it at a later time when you can, but find that balance and control the stress response. And I think controlling the stress response comes with, you know, maintaining good health, you know, and the way that you perceive, you know, stress reactions, because like the stress might still be there, but It's really about how we react to that stress, right? So if I'm like trying to improve my digestive system, and I'm taking all these good herbs and eating a clean diet, eating at the right times, eating to the laws of nature, seasonally, locally, all that, right? But I'm in a stressful environment. I mean, what is that going to really do for my digestive system? I can really only go so far with that, right? So it's really about adapting ourselves to stress responses because stress might always be there. But the way that we react to it can change.
Yeah, I like
Yeah,
that
the way.
response. I was going to go back to that, man, because if going to your workout or whatever it is that day that you do, if it becomes the stress response, if it is the, oh, I don't want to go today. I don't want to go to the, if you're dredging Tuesdays and Thursdays, because that's when you do, if that's what's happening to you, then stop fucking doing that. Change a different, I think that's a great judgment. I like that idea. Now, look, sometimes we don't want to do what we don't want to do, right? But I think we can find the things out there that allow us to make ourselves more mobile, to learn more that are healthy, that really do work for us, that don't maybe work up front and injure us later, but things that do move us, I think are out there, and to try to discover those.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta enjoy what it is that you're doing and not kind of fake it to make it. I really don't like that mantra. I think that's just a total crock of bullshit. I think you have to really enjoy what it is that you're doing, be passionate about it, and then in doing so, it's like working a job that you hate. I mean, that's slavery right there. But if you're doing something that you love and that you're passionate about, you're not really working. You're just serving. You're just using the gifts that you have and creating and bringing those gifts out to the world so that you can share, that magnificence that you hold. And I see a lot of times people, they settle for mediocrity, and they settle for, certain things to get along, to go along, in order to really just fit into the social norms of society. Get married, have kids, work the 9-to-5 job, retire at 65, call it a life, man. And it's a very like backwards thinking in my estimation. There's so much social conditioning that we like bring ourselves into. We don't really question why it is that we do certain things. It's just kind of done by our ancestors and by our parents, and kind of just say, well, this is just the way that it is, right? And there was a famous quote by a great philosopher by the name of Terence McKenna, and he said that culture is not your friend. And that's something that resonates wholeheartedly with me, because culture is something that we consume as a society. It's not something that we create. It's something that is propagated onto us through social engineering, and then we hold on so tightly to these ideologies, because before you're born, you're given a name, a nationality, a religion, and a race. And you never had the choice to decide whether you wanted to abide to that religion, whether you wanted to abide to that race. You were just told that this is the way that it is, this is how it's going to be, and don't ask questions, right? And that's not really being authentic. It's not being true to yourself. And when you get older as an adult, and you're not being influenced and bombarded like you are as a child, you have the choice, to make within yourself whether you want to continue to go down the avenue of obedience, which is basically doing what you're told regardless of what is right, or you can step into the road of morality, which is doing what is right regardless of what you are told. Because culture, in essence, I mean, yeah, it brings people, I guess, together. There's the ethnic music and the food and the traditions. But I mean, if you really look at the grand scheme of things, the global scare a global scale, sorry, culture is not our friend, as Terence McKenna said. It is not benefiting humanity. It is segregating, marginalizing, and confining society to this artificial constraint of how we should be and how we should act according to some label, right? It's like, I'm Jewish, so I have to celebrate this religion or this holiday, sorry. I have to act a certain way. It's like, oh, I'm vegan, I have to adopt the veganism mantra and If I don't, you know, follow it to the nail, the vegan police are going to come after me and arrest me. You know, it's, we're always like so set on these ideologies. And, you know, for me, you know, experimenting with all these forms of diets and hanging out with people associated with those diets and those ideologies, I noticed that it's so dogmatic. And as soon as you go outside their paradigm, boy, man, they're just real quick gonna condemn you and you know, point the finger at you. And basically what I've learned over the last couple of years is that I don't want to fit into any of these ideologies. I don't need any of these labels that people want to slap onto me in order to truly misrepresent who I am. I'm all along the lines of being an integrationalist. So taking different aspects of different concepts and integrating into my practice. So I take a little bit of Jack Cruz. I take a little bit of Wim Hof. I take a little bit of functional patterns. I take a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and I incorporate it into my state of being. And really, that's what it boils down to. I don't need to fit into someone else's viewpoint of how they think I should act in this world based upon whatever culture I'm a part of, you know?
I would agree. That's Yeah, I think the manuals we hunt for in life out of fear of the meaning of the supposed to be's or what it's here, we have a lot of questions a lot of times. And I think the manuals are these labels that we apply. If we are not sure, or if we're fearful of the unknown or the experience, we adapt to the culture and say, well, what's the cultural manual to being part Native American and part Irish, as I am? You know, what's the manual? So if I can wear the culture label, then I know what I'm supposed to act, what color I wear on what day, what team I'm supposed to like, what way I'm supposed to talk, right? We get all these answers and
No thinking, right.
We apply the labels out of the idea of fear, of the not knowing, and walking into our own experience in the present. And I think with that manual, I think it is an opposite way of thinking versus us as the child. When we're the child, the curious one that's looking at their hand for a half an hour, that's spinning in the yard, vulnerable, yes, to many things, but curious and open to all experiences without judgment. And we lose that somewhere along the way. We become adapted to the culture. And here's the fucking shitty part too, is if you adapt to the culture and you play the game, you are rewarded with their toys. Now it's their toys. You're rewarded with the big house if you play the game right. If you do the money thing and then you can provide the big Christmas trees, you can do those things that, well, reward you in that life. And that's the odd part, is where people then go, well, I'm being rewarded. This is what is happening. So if you do play the game, that happens. But I'll tell you, Sean, I know a few people that have played the game very well and have found themselves at the top doing the things they always imagined. And I see them come full circle when they call me and they either, you know, want to start their podcast or write a book or help affect change in people's lives now that they've reached the peak of there is of business. And I see this cycle and I thought, man, if you applied all of those skills of what you did that got you there, if you would have done that 20 years ago for what you believe now, what kind of vision or, you know, creation or what kind of change would have occurred, you know? And it's difficult as we lose that curious childlike, we're told what to do, what to believe, right? Cat Stevens, the minute we can talk, we're taught to listen, you know, and we can't question anything. You're ostracized by the groups, the family. If you don't, hell, if you like a different football team than your family, you're fucking alienated on Sundays or Saturdays, right? I mean, it's ridiculous, but, you know, the sense of nonconformity, even, if you're a conformist and look at a nonconformist, we too have the label of look at the hippie nonconformist that doesn't adhere to anything or any law, no structure. He'll never experience love and family and what it's like to sacrifice 80% of your life for someone else. Right? We too wear the label. And it's... Mm-hmm. It is a fun place to play mentally, bro. Sometimes when you look around, it is, man. And, and sad too, and in a place to where you say, man, you know, in their head, they're living that authentic life, whatever that is. But I remember you talking here a second ago, and if people were watching on YouTube or if you're listening to the podcast at a later date, Sean, your face was perfect for what it does feel like when you do that first questioning of the social norm of why do I want to look like that or do this? That first time you question your shit and then go, oh, fuck. That face where you open up and go, oh my God, then you find that curious kid again. Your face was fucking perfect for it when you were describing when you kind of first woke up, when you're kind of like, oh God, there's so much here of what I'm, whoa, you know, and that, you know, is why I talk about imagine living your own life or having the enthusiasm for your own life as a discovery, as a curious child of what the body can do, how it can perform for you, what it can provide for you, and treating yourself and your life with the enthusiasm that we may treat the same ideas of these social constructs with.
Yeah, man, I totally would wholeheartedly agree with you on that. You know, you don't know that you don't know, right? And that's the first step of unconscious incompetence, right? And then you get into the state of where now you know that you don't know, so you're still, you know, you're consciously incompetent, right? And then you eventually become consciously competent, where hey, I know that I don't know, but I have to like put effort into learning this new way of living. And then the last step is unconscious competence, where you know that you know. And it happens automatically. It's kind of like an example of tying a shoe, really, right? It becomes automatic and you don't have to think about it and have to, you know, put it through here and loop it around and this and that. It's like, it's really automatic, right? And, you know, when you go through this journey of life of discovering really who you are behind the labels, the masks, the identities that have been slapped onto your face, you know, just you kind of have to, in order to find yourself, you have to destroy yourself. You really do. You destroy yourself. You walk through the dark night of the soul, and in finding yourself, you realize that you are not who others think you are. You are not who society thinks you are. You're not who the government says that you are. You are not who your parents said that you were. You are far greater than you could really even conceive, right? We're so identified with this human experience that we have, right? I'm a human being. My name is Sean Wellman. I'm going to school for osteopathy. I'm going to be a manual osteopath. That's who I am. Well, it's like, no, that's a title, okay? That's just a role that you're playing in this world to provide some form of service for other people. It's not who you are, man. At the end of the day, who you are is you're just pure energy, you're pure spirit, you're pure source, you know, and basically, someone's lack of understanding, someone's lack of realization to that, it's not going to change the objectivity behind that, behind what you are. And, you know, I see a lot of times, you know, in society with a lot of people, as you were touching on, in terms of like not wanting to think, you know, we have people that don't want to think for themselves and instead they choose ignorance. And then we have people that don't want to feel emotion, who have been indoctrinated into that to not to feel. So instead we choose apathy. And then we don't want to take action. We rely on an external savior to do it for us. So instead we choose laziness or cowardliness, right? Because we don't want to take the personal responsibility for our lives, for ourselves, to be able to make our own decisions, to feel that within our heart and then act upon it. We want someone else to do it for us because we don't want to be held accountable. We don't want to be held accountable for being wrong. We don't want to be held accountable for making mistakes. We want to put the blame on other people. Well, the government's not doing this, man. They're not doing their job, man. Fuck the liberals, bro. We need the Republicans, man. They're going to help save the day, man. Oh, man, Obama, he was terrible, man. Donald Trump, though, oh, he's going to save us, man, 100%. So we're always looking for these external saviors that are going to, you know, do things for us. You know, that Jesus Christ, second coming, he's coming any minute now to save us from our own demise, you know, our own self-inflicted, conditioned demise that we've put ourselves into, essentially. You know, people will say, well, no, it's the government that did this, the people in power, you know, that's the pyramid, that's a hierarchy. Well, within every pyramid structure, within a heavy pyramid structure, there's a hidden vault, right? And within that hidden vault is the person, the one individual that holds the power to invoke change in this world, to either to give people, to take from people, whatever it might be. And you want to know who that person is? I'll tell you right now, it's not Jesus Christ. It's you. You hold the power for that change. You hold the power to create in this world, because we as a society, we're co-creating together. We have caused the world to be where it is today. Yes, we have been socially engineered. Yes, we have been manipulated through mind control tactics. And it's very difficult to you know, get past that, because it's just hitting you wave after wave after wave, just like the sun's hitting my face right now, lighting me up, looking like kind of Jesus right now, right? But
you're gonna get emails now.
Oh yeah, exactly. I'm the second coming, guys. It's me. I'm here. It's okay. We're safe. But yeah, it's really on us as the individuals. You can't control anything outside of your own thoughts, feelings, and actions. You can't relinquish your power away. You can, you know, buy into the false notion of that. You can buy into the illusion that you can do that. But at the end of the day, that doesn't really matter what your subjectivity is behind that. You can't do that. You know, it doesn't work that way. We're responsible for ourselves. And then, you know, with the majority tipping to, you know, our favor, we can, you know, create such a change in this world. You know, we have all the resources, we have all the technological know-how to create paradise and panacea on this planet. But it really comes down to absolving the ego and stepping into the level where the spirit is. And that comes through bridging the body and the spirit, you know, and meeting it with the mind, right? The spirit comes down, the body flows up, and they meet in the center of the mind, right? So we have to use our mind, our thoughts, to create, you know, the actions we want to see in this world.
What's something that you struggle with, that's something that you're trying to optimize or trying to get a little better, something that you are working on, something daily, something that's still kind of that, not quite here yet, but something you still face?
Quite a few things, I think. One would be body structure. You know, because I suffered from debilitating chronic pain for quite a few years.
What happened, man? What happened?
So I'm doing function. Nothing in particular. I mean, I worked as a personal trainer, and, you know, the standard personal meathead trainer who, you know, just lifts a bunch of heavy weights and not really thinking about biomechanics and how that relates to human movement, what you're doing in a particular exercise. I just got a wear and tear in my body, essentially. And I had a anterosolesis in my L5 S1 region. I had some scoliosis, bone spurs forming into my vertebrae, a bunch of things. And, you know, through doing functional patterns, it's helped out a lot. I'm on week 9 right now of the 10-week program. And I've seen some really beneficial changes, not only in my posture, just the way that I feel. It's affecting even like my organ systems, you know, like better digestion as a result of just better posture. You know, finance wise, you know, I'm in school right now, so I graduate in August. I'm going to graduate as a manual osteopath. So, you know, I'm just looking to really be more financially independent. And then health wise, you know, I feel pretty good. I got some little, you know, new Austins, that's the word, that I have to correct, which I know that I will. And, you know, that's really what it boils down to, just self-improvement, because at a very young age, I was like 21, and I got really sick. You know, nothing like life-threatening or anything, but I'll tell a little brief story. It was actually in 2012, January 1st, 2012, right after the new year. I was out partying at, I think it was called Bellevue Manor. It was this it's like a banquet hall, right? So you pay a ticket, you meet, you get dinner, there's dancing, you know, you're celebrating for the New Year's, lots of, you know, good looking chicks, man. It's a great time, man. And yeah, I woke up the next morning and I started just noticing like certain like weird symptoms, right? And I was just like, okay, that's kind of odd. And like it was symptoms related to like my urinary tract. Okay, so now I had sex with a girl like a week before, so I was like, man, maybe this girl gave me like an STD or something, right? So I went and got checked out, and turns out I was fine, right? Which is good, but I was still getting these symptoms, and I was like, what's going on, right? It's like, I don't understand. So I kept going to the doctor, went through the medical system, and they told me I had non-bacterial chronic prostatitis. And I'm telling you, kid you not, it was so bad that I could barely even sit down. This is a 21-year-old guy, right? At the prime of his health. And it didn't stop there, though, unfortunately. I developed I'm just going to throw it out here, man. I really don't care. I had like a lump on my testicle, right? I was like, the hell is going on, man? I thought I had cancer. You know, when you go online, you do a Google search, you type something in, it's like, okay, you have stage 4 cancer. And you're just tripping the hell out, right? It turns out it was just a cyst. But then, you know, like I said, it didn't stop there. Then, I was a personal trainer at the time. So part of being a personal trainer is to exercise, look the part, things of that nature. So what I noticed, though, is that every time I would work out, I would have gross hematuria, which is a medical term for pissing out blood. And I was doing this for like 6 months. And for some reason it happened, after I would work out. And then that was just like a domino effect, right? It went from there to severe bloating, digestive troubles, to, massive joint pains, massive muscle pain, TMJ in my jaw, depression, anxiety, you name it, man. It was a total roller coaster ride for me, because like I said, I'm 21-year-old. I didn't know any of this stuff. I was just like the average, you know, individual. It's just trying to have a good time, party, you know, YOLO, you know, do that, you know, that kind of stuff. And it wasn't until I met, an osteopath, actually, which is what inspired me to become one, who he kind of was telling me about like my eating habits and how it was affecting my health. So he told me actually originally to be a raw vegan, right? And I was like, you know what, man, I'm desperate, I'll try it out. So I did the raw veganism, and you know what, to my surprise, it actually helped out a lot, because a lot of the symptoms that I was dealing with, they dissipated, they went away. But then, of course, you know, with raw veganism, there's like a honeymoon phase. You know, you start feeling good in the beginning, you know, everything's good in the relationship, but then things come crashing down. And then, you know, and then I experimented with so many different diets, and it wasn't really until I stopped focusing on the diets and started focusing on lifestyle and circadian rhythms and cold therapy, things of that nature, that's when I really started to see some big changes in my health, right? And you know, this is what's really inspired myself to get the YouTube channel going, the Facebook page, and you know, just everywhere I go, just educating people on
what's
this
that
stuff.
What's that page, just man? Giving, put the page out there for everybody.
Yeah, exactly. Photo-electric synergy. So it's for Facebook, and then also for YouTube, for Instagram. So if you want to give me a follow and learn a little bit more, by all means, you know, you can do so. But that's really what's inspired me, just to educate people with the knowledge that I've attained over the last 5-6 years, because, you know, I know what it's like to suffer. And yeah, I didn't have, you know, cancer or any of these severe illnesses, but you know what? My suffering is not a competition, right? I'm not trying to compete my suffering to someone else's suffering and be like, well, dude, you know, you're over exaggerating this and that. You didn't suffer that much. It's like, dude, you didn't live in my body. You didn't experience what I've experienced. So it's very easy to point out these, judgments onto me. You know,
well, even at 20, At 21, just experiencing the idea of any sort of physical threat to one's health. At 21, at 21, bro, I had a God complex, man. I was trying to get shot, thinking it wouldn't hurt. You know what I mean? There was no stopping me. So if there's anything that hits you at that age, when you're, especially if you're in the training field where the image, when all that is hitting the same way, that is a humbling feeling at 21. Sometimes it kind of slows you down in that 20 indestructible phase in the 20s, where you're like, I can do anything, and it can be shatter a psyche really hard, especially if you have history of being an athlete, performing well at things, relying on performance, and then when you don't have control of it, when you can't work it out to make it go away, right? You can't. There's certain things you apply, man, and I don't think anybody can really, I don't think anyone understands anybody anyway when it comes to their trauma. I mean, ghetto's in the mind frame, which yours is yours. Your experience, your trauma is your trauma. So, I mean, for you, fuck, it's bad. So it may be that for someone else, but to the experience, yeah, or to, I mean, the perceiver.
Totally. Yeah. Sorry, just one sec.
So how long have you been on? Basically, you covered a routine of the cryo, the ice, the showers, etc., along with a few other things. But when you first started to make that transition, say for somebody that really doesn't quite have the fuel to be motivated at this point, right, to change, but is trying to kind of work their way in, like you started. Now, for me, it went differently. I think once you begin to peek through the other side, it just sucks you in, and you can't just slowly go in. Because once you feel the effects of applying it, you can't deny that shit. You can't do it once you do it. So I think people end up going in hard anyway. Once it comes in, you're trying. But you know, for somebody, for you, it was beginning with the cold showers, etc. You talked about the routine for somebody, but what would you kind of say to that person that is on that kind of fence, that maybe they know they don't like lifting weights anymore or something? Maybe they know they don't like doing the CrossFit or something they're doing, or maybe they heard of FP. Maybe they've been doing a little bit of FP already, but they're still dealing with things mentally. There's still other issues, right? What would you kind of speak to them or say to start them out with?
Well, I mean, I would really first start off by saying, step out of the creature comforts that you have and step into the unknown, step into the uncharted territories of not knowing what results are going to take place. And don't be discouraged by trying different things initially and not seeing the results, because like I said, most people in society are looking for instant gratification. You know, they expect, okay, if I exercise this one time, if I do a functional patterns myofascial release session for 1 hour the first time, then I'm going to be out of pain instantaneously. It doesn't work that way. These patterns have been ingrained within you. It's taken a long time for you to get where you're at right now, and it's going to take some time to get you out of that. So you have to just, you know, stay optimistic. I'm not even going to say stay positive, right? Because I mean, hey, if we follow Nadia Aguilera, you know, we know that he hates the word positive. So you know what? And I, it's not that I hate that word. I'm more along the lines of holistic thinking. So,
well, how one applies the definition, at least in the short term, perhaps not in the long term, of a general society overview of its positivity of using subjective language, but for the person, if that positive word is enough to get you to a place. Because look, I would argue that some of the most negative shit that ever happened to me was the best fucking shit that ever happened to me. So that's some of the most positive things I've ever experienced. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also, if we're always so focused on the positive, you know, we always want to feel good 24/7. Then we're actually not seeing some of the negatives that are going on, maybe within ourselves, in the habits that we're doing, within societal structures. We're avoiding the negative, right? And that's really what the New Age movement is all about. The negative, because if you go into the negative and you analyze the negative, it's going to bring more negative experiences in your life.
Yeah.
No, that's not how it works. If you avoid the negative, you're going to bring about more negative in your life, because you're avoiding the problem that you need to correct,
right?
Which would have you have to look at the negative. Like if I have cancer, what am I going to do? Avoid the fact that I have cancer because it's a negative association. It's a negative associated disease. So I'm going to avoid it and just be positive, and it's just going to go away. Not to say that having a good mindset isn't a factor to good health, because it absolutely is, right? It's one of the most important things, I think. But you have to actually take action by focusing on some of the negative. And then in turn, if we always focus on the negative, you know, then we're avoiding like all the positive, beautiful things that life can bring, right? Yeah, there are some crazy shit going on in this world if you don't have your head, you know, in the sand and your ass up in the air. But there is a lot of magnificent, beautiful things that this world brings. I mean, from anywhere from the nature to just the human spirit itself, the will of humanity to not bow down, to keep fighting, no matter what's in its trajectory, no matter what adversity it has to face, you know, that will, you know, in spite of all that is powerful, man. It's amazing, you know, it's really inspiring. But getting back to like what someone could do, you know, on their health journey, best thing to do is first thing in the morning, get outside and look towards the sunrise, 15 degrees below the sun for a minimum of 2 to 3 minutes, if you can, even if it's the wintertime, even if it's cloudy, because in doing so, with doing that, you're going to activate 8 hormones in your anterior pituitary gland. You're going to stimulate the production of melatonin. You're going to stimulate serotonin production, dopamine, oxytocin, even antidiuretic hormones. There's a lot of things, right? Doing that in combination with a cold therapy practice, like the cold showers or an ice bath, you know, 5 minutes, 2 to 3 times a week, making sure to ground as much as you can, optimize your sleep environment, get some grounding sheets at grounded.com, crack your window open in the evening if you're in a chilly area, get some cold therapy, mild cold therapy while you're sleeping. Block artificial blue light at night because it suppresses our melatonin. Melatonin helps to activate 500 genes. It's one of the most potent antioxidants in the body. It's anti-cancer. It actually helps to drive DHA, docosahexaenic acid, into our cell membranes, which is required to convert photonic light that we receive from the sun into a DC electric current going through the electron chain transport into the mitochondria to produce energy, right? So if we optimize all these practices and we understand more about circadian biology, which is our 24-hour cycle that our body goes through that regulates cell behavior, metabolism, growth, and so forth, you know, we're gonna end up being in a lot better place than we were, you know, prior. We have to understand how our physiology works. We don't have to be experts. We don't have to be a Jack Cruz, you know, but we have to have some level of understanding of how this machine operates. And we have to abide to the laws of nature, right? Because this is how our body works. It is what it is. And we're not nocturnal animals, right? You know, you can party hard here and there. That's great. But if you're doing that all the time, it's going to have a huge biological toll on the system. And it's going to bite you in the ass, right? I mean, if it's not biting you in the ass already, it's going to come. You know, don't think that you can evade that. Don't be very naive in that regard. It will come to bite you back in the ass. And it might be, I wouldn't say too late, but it might be a lot harder to get yourself out of the hole that you dug yourself into when you're, let's say, 60 years old versus when someone like myself, who was 21 years old, who, you know, had the enough, I guess, wit to realize that, you know what, I'm 21 fucking years old, bro. I feel like crap. I fucking look like crap now. Maybe not look like crap, but I didn't feel good, man. I felt like trash, and you know, that's how I viewed myself actually in some regards. And I knew that that wasn't normal. I knew that that was not normal. So I was able to rise above that, and you know, it wasn't easy, man. And what you were touching on earlier, you know, once you kind of start the journey, you can't really stop. Because believe me, bro, I've tried. I've tried to sedate myself. I've tried to numb myself. You start becoming so conscious and aware of certain things, and you're just like, oh my God, this is crazy. And you try to share this information with people, and you're just getting deaf ears, right? And you feel hopeless, you know, for humanity in certain regards. And you kind of just want to shut away and
But remember what you said, right? Is we don't really save other people, right? That when it really comes down to it, the person saves themselves. And we can provide the information and to put it out there. I remember in my ethics class and mental health counseling that, you know, they emphasize that you are not the one, that, you know, God complex is a big thing that doctors go through, psychologists, psychiatrists, MDs, and they really emphasize the idea that, remember, you're not the one that healed them, that this person is responsible for them, because they may even leave therapy and do bad things, right? That you're not that one that should have saved them or did save them, and being responsible to knowing that we are, like you said in the beginning of this podcast, that we are responsible for ourselves and that proximity and keeping ourselves healthy.
Yeah. And even to add to that, you know, like, there really is no healers per se in this world. There really is just one. And it's the human body, because the human body is a self-organizing, self-regulating system. What we really are is we're just facilitators, right? So if I'm doing a treatment with someone in osteopathy, I'm facilitating a healing response in the body. I'm giving the body, I guess, the resources or the light switch, turning on that light switch for it to start regulating itself through homeostasis, right? Doing things essentially with functional patterns, right? We're all teachers and educators and facilitators of the information that's going to allow the body to heal itself, right? So, you know, I never would really consider myself a guru, or I don't really like consider a lot of other people's gurus either. I just see in certain people with, you know, a certain level of experience that they've had in their lives. They've applied certain knowledge, you know, in the form of wisdom, and it's worked for them. And now they're sharing that information with others in hopes that it'll help them too, because it's human nature for us to be compassionate individuals willing to help others. Because, you know, when you help another person, Adam, I'm sure you feel good. I'm sure you feel a level of satisfaction within yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
In some aspects, it's like, you know, you're helping someone else, but you're kind of doing it for your own, you know, your own selfish ways in some aspect, right? But I think the word selfish has a negative connotation to it. And it's not all what it's made out to be. It's kind of been revised in that negative light. I think that it's important to, you know, just guide people in the right direction of what worked for you, and hope that they are able to come to the light that you've observed yourself. And it's very rewarding. You know, I'm actually reading a book right now. You might have read it before, or at least heard of it. It's called Nonviolent Communication by Marshall Rosenberg. Heard of that book before?
Maybe it crossed my mind. No, I'd be lying if I said, I know it.
You got to lie, man. Lie right now. It's a really good book. It's sold over 1 million copies worldwide, and it really just emphasizes how
that's funny. You're like lying right now. Hold on, let me
just lie, man. Oh yeah, I read the book. Yeah, it was amazing, man. I can't believe you brought that up.
No, man.
But getting back to the book though, it talks a lot about just learning how to speak with compassion, and seeing the underlying feelings and needs that a person is trying to convey to you, that they may not be able to, they may not understand how to convey that message in a way for you to receive it in a positive fashion, right? Where you're not going to feel, resistant to the information and defensive to it. And, you know, when we're receiving a message from someone, there's really four phases to that. There's observing what they're saying, really seeing the feeling behind what they're saying, what it is that they need behind those feelings, and then what it is that they're requesting, right? Because there's always something that they're requesting, but then that can get intertwined with different things, right? Because an observation could then become an evaluation, which is not necessarily the best thing, because if you automatically evaluate someone and put your stamp of what you think that they are, oh, this person is this, this, or this, then, you know, you're not really observing things from an objective point. You're just putting your subjective opinion on someone based upon what you think in relation to what they're saying. That may be disheartening to you, whether what they're saying is true or not, because it require, if you, for you to accept that what they're saying is true would maybe require you to take responsibility to make some changes, and it may not be something you want to do. And then also, a request versus a demand. You know, how do we gauge when you're requesting something from someone versus a demand? So what this book talks about is that when you make a request from someone and you're not trying to guilt trip them if things don't go your way, you know, that's a request. But if you try guilt tripping them and you don't really empathize with them and you don't accept their answer as is, then that's really, it becomes a demand, right? It's like, well, how dare you? How dare you not listen to my demand, right? And yeah, I find the book very interesting. Yeah, I think that a lot of people should, grab a copy of it and take note, because it can really help the way that we communicate with one another and really see the underlying feelings and needs of what a person is really speaking to when they're conversing with you, and just how we, you know, what our choices are to react to quote unquote attacks, negative messages. So there's different methods we can do. We can be guilted by what they say and be like, man, yeah, he's right, I am a fucking asshole. And then we could get defensive and be like, no, man, you're the fucking asshole. Or what we can do is we can see the underlying feelings and needs through that message, and then what our feelings and needs are in response to that, in response to what they're saying. So yeah, man, it's a very fascinating book. I'd definitely recommend it. Nonviolent Communication, Marshall Rosenberg. Check it out. I don't make any money off of it. And even if I did, would it be such a bad thing either, man? Let me make a little bit of money, man.
No, I think you should write your own book, Sean. I think that's something you should start working on, man.
Yeah, I've thought about that. It's in my affirmations, man. I got a list of affirmations that I read every morning and every night, just kind of goals that I want to set. Definitely, yeah. Would like to. I'm gonna be co-authoring in actually a book that should be coming out in the spring. It's a very short piece.
Yeah,
not very long, but
what's that?
Yeah, I definitely would like to write something. Sorry,
what's that called?
Good question.
Yeah.
It's a Badass Breakfast. Badass okay. Breakfast. Yeah. So it's just certain breakfast ideas, and then just giving your little 1-2 piece on, you know, your experiences of health and how things have, you know, assisted you in your journey to thinking more clearly and feeling better physically.
Well,
I definitely would like to at some point.
Yeah. Well, I think you're already on, you got one, you're helping, you're still young, man. And quite the cerebral guy for being so young. Since you did start your YouTube channel and you're starting to deliver this competence and share it, which is partly part something that I agree with you in full part, that is, if we have the competence and the knowledge, you know, that it's almost a duty to collect that, put that out there in an organized fashion and try to help others, even just tell your neighbor, tell the people across the street, share that knowledge in a way so it really helps people. But since you're starting to do that and you're kind of young in the start of getting your page up, et cetera, to let somebody that may be watching TCR or be linked to it to tune in, you know, what is Sean Weldman's philosophy? What is the philosophy that you kind of make choices by, that you lead your life with? It may come out, if you will, in the podcast or the show or the YouTube channel, whatever you eventually end up running full time.
Well, I mean, my philosophy is really just based on morality that ties to natural law principles. So what I mean by natural law is something that that goes beyond man-made law, because you can't write out morality onto a piece of paper as if you solely created morality, that you have that God-given right to do so. That's something that is actually inherent to creation, and it's our ability, it's our job as individuals to align our perceptions to what morality is. And really, the best way that I can describe morality is knowing the difference between right and wrong behavior, because a lot of people have this false notion that, you know, what's right for me is what's right for me, what's wrong for me is what's wrong for me. No matter, you know, I can do something that's right for me, and even if it's humane or immoral and it hurts other people, you know, if it benefits myself, then I'm good, right? You can think that way, but that's not never going to make it something that's based in truth. The difference between right or wrong really comes down to two words. And then this is really what my philosophy is all about, because I think if people don't understand this core principle and they see money as the only true value system, then that really leads to a corrupted mindset, which leads to a corrupted world, a corrupted infrastructure. So it's so important for us to understand these principles and to really hone them into, you know, our way of living, I guess, right? So there's two words, and those two words are don't steal, okay, in relation to morality. So just to give a little bit of a couple examples, murdering someone, that's stealing from them. You're stealing their free will choice to live and prosper in this world. Rape, that is something that was be based in a wrong, because you're taking someone's sexuality and choice to consent with you in a sexual context. The act of stealing itself, taking someone's assets, you know, that they've worked for with their hard-earned labor, that's based in a wrong. Trespassing, breaking into someone's home and violating their personal space for safety, that's a wrong. Coercion, telling someone, you have to do what I say, give me this, this, or this, or else there will be a consequence. And, you know, that is based in immorality as well, because if someone's worked with their own body, because you own your body, right? If someone's working with their own body and someone's taking any bit of that from you that you've earned in the form of an asset, that is based in a wrong. It doesn't matter if it's legal, illegal, whatever it might be in terms of the jurisdiction and where you're living. It is not based in truth, because you own your body and therefore you have a right to keep what it is that you earned through your hard-earned labor, and no one has a right to take that from you. And better yet, if a so-called authority figure has a right to do that, and we live in a democratic society where we delegated the rights to an institution, then how is it that we couldn't do the same action if we gave them the rights to do that action in the first place? You know what I mean? It doesn't make sense, right? And then also, just my philosophy is really just living along with the lines with nature, you know, living with the laws of the circadian rhythms and the daylight cycles, and understanding how our bodies operate and living in abidance to that. Because when we align ourselves to natural law principles, we're actually rewarded with health and you know, intellect, good, you know, all those things, right? Just good health in general, and you know, good mindset, happiness. And then if we go against that, you know, you can go against that, but there is consequences to your choices, and those consequences can result in pain, suffering, you know, disease, sadness, misery, right? So yeah, you can break the law, right? And I'm talking about natural law, but you will receive consequences through cause and effect, through the laws of karma, right? So I guess that's really this my philosophy, or maybe the philosophy that I've aligned myself to. I don't know, either or, whatever works better for the viewer.
Yeah, what works better for you is how you apply it, man. I appreciate you sharing, man. I appreciate you coming on and rampaging. You certainly have, sir. I might have to go back and listen to you. There's a couple good ones in there I really was digging.
Sweet, man. Yeah, it was really great coming on here, man. I appreciate you value in having me, and you know, I've followed your work for quite some time, and I appreciate the stuff that you're doing. I think you're doing a fantastic job. So, you know, just keep at it, man, and we're all just trying to help people, you know.
I appreciate it, brother. And whatever we can do, when your YouTube, share it again too, if you want to put the tag out there, the website at all, do that to wrap it up. But whatever we can do, share it in the tribe, whatever information you're putting out there, man, and you get some new findings, you get your episodes going back up there, man, and we'll get you back on it again. We created that Tribe of Change podcast too, man. So anytime, man, you're feeling froggy, you want to go by yourself, you want to interview somebody, that TOC podcast we made, man, that's open for everybody in that tribe at any time to start putting content out.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Another thing, if you're interested, to put a link below this podcast that we're doing, I wanted to talk about a product actually that I think is very beneficial for people to take, because of the environment that we're living in, the artificial blue lit environment that we're exposed to. So For anyone who isn't aware, when we're exposed to blue light, it oxidizes DHA, which is an omega-3 fatty acid in the eye, okay? And then you add in combination with non-native EMFs from cell phones, computers, you lose DHA within your cell membrane. So if you're losing DHA in the eye, then guess what? It's going to have to come through the brain, which makes up about roughly one-third of the brain, DHA. It's going to come from the brain into the eyes to replenish it, right? So that's not going to be really good in the long run because, like I said before in your podcast earlier, DHA converts photonic light into an electric current. So important for mitochondrial function because mitochondria is really the key to health. So there's a, you know, people will be like, well, you know, I can eat fish and this and that. And that's great. You know, if you want to go through with that, I have no issues. You know, I'm not very dogmatic with diets. But there's a product. I'm not sure if you've heard of it before. It's called Mitolife DHA. It's by a buddy of mine, Matt Blackburn. And basically, this is an algae form of DHA. It's water extracted. There's no solvents, no toxic solvents. It's indoor grown, so it's away from the pollution cycle of the oceans. And you know, I eat fish right now, right? But I've been taking this stuff, and personally, from my experience and from the experience that I've, sorry, from a lot of people's testimonials, it's a total game changer, man. Total game changer because, like I said, we're being bombarded with all this blue light, being bombarded by all the non-native EMF that we can only control to a certain amount. So having enough DHA into our bodies is going to be really key and critical to benefit our health. So I can provide a link for you, and then people can go and check that out
Well,
because I think it's
what's the
vitally
website?
important.
Yeah, put the website up now. Just go and put out
Yeah, it's
whatever the domain is.
mitolife.us. And if you guys use a discount code photoelectric synergy, it's one word, you'll get 15% off the order.
Beautiful. Man, I love the
Yeah, so.
biohacking. I appreciate you sharing, man. I'll cop me some and try a little bit. I'm in the sun pretty often though and doing
Yeah,
my
man.
thing. I'm dying now, so I'm trying to get outside and get my hour or two before I start tonight's podcast, man, because I got a triple header tonight, man.
Oh,
But
wow. Okay.
I appreciate you sharing, man. I look forward to seeing more of you, man, on social media, YouTube, iTunes, all over the place, man.
Yeah, absolutely, man. We'll have to do this again sometime for sure.
You know it, man. And again, Tribe of Change podcast any day, anytime, man. Steve will set you up. Email him now that you got the email. You've exchanged emails with him. So anytime you want that, man, just say, hey, I want to cognitively rampage, man. I got something to say, or I want to cross promote, or I got somebody I want to interview. Steve will set you right up, man. It's open. But once the show's popping, you're going off, man, I would love to help cross promote that too. So once you're really going up and going, I would love to help anytime, man. And of course, we help here with the show and putting it out there too, man.
Sweet, yeah. I definitely would be interested in that. You know, that'd be a good thing.
Yeah, spread the knowledge.
I got a lot of things to rampage about, man. Sometimes it's a little bit too much in my head, so be good to get it out there sometimes, you know? Just let it all out, man.
I think you fed
So
some
yeah.
people tonight some good competence experience, at least at the same time, man. So I appreciate you coming on, Sean, and I'll see you more online and in the tribe for sure. And I know I'll see you on here again too, man.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Just keep it real, champs, you know? Activate the champ within. That's what it's all about.